Well, we had a bit of a cliffhanger yesterday when we had to close up. We are in Numbers chapter 11, and I believe we're going to start in verse number 25 after I give you a real quick summary of the situation here. The Israelites left Mount Sinai on the 20th day of the second month of the second year of the Exodus. So right around a year after they left Egypt, about a year and a month after they left Egypt. And they're on their way to the Promised Land. And as soon as they leave from Mount Sinai, people start griping about things. We have God burn up in judgment, some people living in the fringes of the encampment. And then, even after that, there are still people griping about, we've only got manna to eat, nothing like we used to eat even when we were slaves in Egypt. We want something more than meat to eat. We want some meat. And Moses has a leadership meltdown at this point. He knows that these people are griping to him, and they're griping about God, and he tells God, why should I have to put up with all this? I didn't want this job in the first place, and I wish you'd just kill me and get it over with rather than me having to put up with all this garbage. Now, that's me rephrasing it, but you know that's the emotional communication that's coming out in the inspired text here. Now, he didn't need to have that meltdown, remember. A year previous, his father-in-law had seen him trying to carry the leadership load on his own and warned him that it was going to be a bad thing for the people and for himself. He needed to have multi-levels of leadership, starting with somebody over every 10 families, and then somebody over 5 of those groups, and then somebody over 10 of the total groups of 10 families, and then somebody over every 100 of those groups, and right up until you've got kind of the leadership of each of the tribes. That's what his father-in-law had told him he ought to have in place for the benefit of everyone involved. But Moses apparently didn't listen at the time. He let things get to this crisis point on their departure from Sinai, and then he himself is just feeling he wants out of it. And God tells him, nope, you need to bring 70 leaders to the tabernacle, and I'm going to take some of the supernatural gifting of the Holy Spirit that I have on you and spread it out on them. And this will make things easier to bear. So they're having this leadership issue, but also the food issue. And God, in response to that, had said, I'm going to feed you guys so much meat during the next 30 days, you'll be sick of it. So it's a kind of punishment that fits the crime response. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. But first, we have those 70 leaders. Numbers chapter 11, verse 25, says that then he who is came down in the cloud and spoke to Moses, and he took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. So this is the Sanhedrin. It has already been in existence, but now there's a supernatural gifting element to it. And as soon as the Spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not continue doing so. Now, prophesying is a supernatural speaking on behalf of God. It's not just simply preaching or teaching from the Bible. I don't prophesy. I teach from what I study from the inspired Word of God. There is a big difference. Prophesying done by prophets is God speaks directly through you to the people. So these guys did this one time as a sign that God was going to use them. They did not continue in the office of prophet, though. That's very clearly pointed out here. It's just simply a sign gift to let everybody know these are the 70 designated leaders that are going to be helping Moses. Now, 26 reports that two men remained in the camp. That is, they didn't show up for the meeting. Now, why they didn't show up is a matter for speculation. It could be that they were stubborn. Maybe they were boycotting the meeting because they didn't like Moses. I've seen that in the commentaries. But it's also possible that something happened and they simply got delayed and they didn't make it to the meeting on time. And so it says one of them was named Eldad, the other named Medad. The Spirit rested on them. They were among those registered, but they had not gone out to the tent, and so they prophesied in the camp. So they are doing their God-speaking outside the boundaries of the tabernacle. And people are seeing this. Verse 27, a young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. So they're out there doing something that the other leaders, the 68 of them, are doing inside the tabernacle. These two guys are doing it far outside the tabernacle. And so Joshua, the son of Nun, the assistant of Moses from his youth, said, my Lord Moses, stop them. And so he wants Moses to tell these guys, don't do that. You're not where you belong. Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Oh, would that all he who is his people were prophets, that he who is would put his spirit on them. So Moses is like, Joshua, don't be that way. I am glad to see this. And it seems to be the case that even if these two guys were kind of boycotting Moses' command, Moses doesn't care. He's like, hey, as long as they're getting some of the responsibility to take care of these people, I'm good with that. In fact, Joshua, I wish everybody was getting a piece of God's Spirit so that I wouldn't have this burden to have to deal with. I see a similar attitude in Paul when he is writing, I think it's to the Philippians perhaps, that some people are trying to cause trouble for Paul by, you know, talking about the gospel all the time, while others are doing it out of genuine spirit. And Paul says, I don't care why they're talking about Jesus. I'm just glad they're talking about Jesus. And so that's kind of Moses' attitude with Joshua is, don't worry about this, Joshua. At least we're going to see leadership taking place in a wider range than it is right now. And then Moses and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. So all of that happened on the same day that this then occurs in the evening. Then a wind from He Who Is sprang up, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side around the camp and about 2 cubits above the ground. So we have quail show up miraculously. God blows them in on a wind. If Mount Sinai area is where I suspect it to be, which would be somewhere in southern Jordan, just north of Saudi Arabia's border there, east and maybe a little bit north of the Gulf of Aqaba area of the Red Sea extension of the Indian Ocean, then the sea that we're reading about here is the Red Sea. And so the wind is blowing in to the encampment of Israel from that direction, and it is blowing this huge monster flock of quail with it. Probably God had already started gathering these quail up long before this, or He is spontaneously creating them. Either one is just as easy for God to do. So let's not worry about the miraculousness of this. Let's just understand it is miraculous. So He blows in this monster covey of quail, so much so that there are quail laying around on the ground all around the Israeli encampment for a day's journey. Now, how much is a day's journey? Well, anywhere from 15 to 20 miles probably would be an easy day's journey. So that's a lot of quail. And the people rose all that day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quail. So it takes them 2 full days to gather up this quail. Those who gathered least gathered 10 homers. Now, how much is a 10 is 10 homers? Well, I've got to remind myself here. Let me look in my notes and get this. And 10 homers. 10 homers, that would be the equivalent of 72.65 bushels. So think about one of those round plastic laundry baskets. Think of getting 72 of those full of quail. And that's the small gathering. And so they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. Now, what they mean is that they start processing them, because they're going to have to pluck and gut these things and start either cooking or smoking or drying this meat so that it can be around. Verse 33, while the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of He Who Is was kindled against the people, and He Who Is struck down the people with a very great plague. Now, this is part of God's judgment. The worst of these people start wolfing down this quail meat, and they're not thankful for it. They are just greedy for it. And they gobble it down, and God sees that bad attitude. And so for that group, that special group of greedy gobblers, He executes them, because they're the ones that started this whole bad attitude about the manna. And that's why this place gets named what it's named. Verse 34, therefore, the name of this place was called Kibroth Hatava, because there they buried the people who had the craving. If you want to translate it into our vernacular, it's basically graves of greediness. So this is the first named encampment after they left Mount Sinai. The graves of greediness. And a whole bunch of people died on the way there and while they were there. And it would appear that God did not let them move forward from that place until they deal with some of this attitude. And it's not just the people that have an attitude. We're about to read that some of the leadership has an attitude as well. From Kibroth Hataava, the people journeyed to Hazeroth, and they remained in Hazeroth. So they are now being delayed probably about a month, because remember God said, I'm not going to give you so much meat that you can only eat it in 1 or 2 days. I'm going to give you so much meat, it'll be coming out of your noses for a month. So they are apparently at the graves of greediness for about a month. Then God has them move their encampment to the next place, to Hazeroth. Now, what happens at Hazeroth? Chapter 12. And this one makes me very sad and frustrated for Moses. Miriam and Aaron. Now, who are they? Miriam and Aaron are the older sister and brother of Moses. Aaron is only 3 years older than Moses. And presumably Miriam is at least 3 or so years older than Aaron, which would make her probably 6 or more years than Moses. Remember, she's the little girl that made sure that Moses was taken care of by his own mother as the wet nurse for the Pharaoh's daughter when Pharaoh's daughter found Moses. Remember all that? So that tells you approximately how much older she is than Moses. So Aaron has been functioning as the high priest, and Miriam is a prophetess. She is designated with that terminology in other places. She's the one that sang the victories song with the ladies of the encampment after the crossing of the Red Sea and Pharaoh's chariot forces being drowned. So both Miriam and Aaron are good people. They are siblings of Moses, and you would think they would be committed to his God-given leadership. But they run into a personal problem. It says that they spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. Now, the commentaries all have different ways of trying to handle this. I'll give you my way of handling it in just a moment. But some of them will say that all the peoples of the southern Middle East were termed as Cushites by the Semite people. I am not altogether certain that that's the case. And some of them will say that's why Moses' Midianite wife is being talked about here, that she was a Cushite. I actually have my doubts that that's the case. Because typically, Cushite is a reference this time period in the writing of the Old Testament to the Ethiopian people, who were the southern part of the Egyptian kingdom. And Cush in Hebrew has to do with black. It has to do with a very dark skin. What we're reading here is that Miriam and Aaron were upset about the black woman that Moses had married. Now, that's apparently not the Midianite wife, Zipporah, because Zipporah is actually of the same Semite ethnic group as the Israelites. So she is in the same basic skin tone group that Moses and Aaron and Miriam are in. This woman appears to be a black woman. She is from the Cushite, which would be from the Hamite line. They have a lot more melanin that falls within the gene pool on that direction. It's all human race, understand, but there does seem to be higher melanin content with some of the groups that are down in Africa, descendant from Ham. So the Cushites in particular, very dark people. We have a Jewish tradition, very ancient. It's referenced in the books of Josephus in the first century AD, that while Moses was functioning as an Egyptian chariot force leader, that he was sent on maneuvers against the Cushite people, the Ethiopians, who were in rebellion at that time. And that while he was surrounding one particular city, that the princess of that group, a Cushite princess, volunteered to become his wife in order to help bring the problem to an end. And so that's a long-standing Jewish tradition that Moses was married to a Cushite woman when he first lived in Egypt, before he left. And I believe that that is probably accurate. Now, what happened is he left Egypt very rapidly after killing that taskmaster, and he could not contact his Cushite wife, and so he just disappears from the situation and probably assumed that she would go on with her life even as he went on with his life and married someone else. Well, I believe that when he shows back up at Egypt again 40 years later, that this woman found out about it and she reasserts herself as his Cushite wife. And when she shows up, or her messenger shows up, perhaps, to the Israeli encampment, and Miriam and Aaron find out about it, Miriam in particular is ticked off. She doesn't like this one tiny bit. And she lets it be known. So let's read it again. And I want you to understand, I'm functioning from this understanding I just shared with you that the tradition amongst the Jews is correct. Moses had been married to a Cushite woman, and that somehow that marriage comes back up at this particular time in history. So Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he'd married, for he'd married a Cushite woman. And they said, and actually the thrust is much more about what Miriam is saying here. Has he who is indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? So they are throwing their weight around as representatives of God. Now, it seems to be more Miriam than Aaron, because Miriam is the one that gets punished by God. And make no mistake about it, what is going on here is wrong. They are griping about Moses being married to a black woman, and they think that that is a reason for him to let them do more of the leadership. So they are kind of pulling off a little bit of a mini coup here, or trying to. And God is not going to let that happen. So he who is heard it. Now, verse 3 for some people is very problematic, because we understand that the first five books of the Old Testament are called the books of Moses, because Moses wrote these things down. And other than a few verses at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, they were all finished before Moses died. Joshua probably added the last few verses in the book of Deuteronomy that describes Moses' death. But this appears to be one of the things that Moses wrote down about himself. And the way most of our English versions read, it sounds a little self-centered. It says, verse 3, "Now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth." Now, in religious circles, Christian circles, meekness is a good thing. It's a righteous equivalent. And so it feels almost like Moses is saying that he was the best of all peoples living on the earth at this point. If you look at the original language, though, there is another way that this word meek could be translated into our English. Let me read it to you that way. "Now the man Moses was very depressed, more than all people who were on the face of the earth." Now that fits into the context, both here and the broader context at this time. Remember, it wasn't very much farther back before this that Moses was saying, "God, I can't handle this. Just kill me and get it over with." So Moses clearly was depressed by a lot of the problems that were happening during this time period. And it wouldn't be a bit surprising for him to acknowledge that at this point in his writing. Verse 4, "Suddenly he who is said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, 'Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting.' And the three of them came out." Now, I don't know if this is the tent of meeting as in the tabernacle, or the tent of meeting that is outside the camp that serves as Moses' office. My suspicion at this point as I'm talking to you is that this is Moses' office, and that it is now God's office, and that basically these three siblings are being called to God's office for addressing down. So verse 5, "He who is came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forward. And he said, 'Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, he who is, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house.'" That line, by the way, is quoted in the book of Hebrews. So God is dressing down Aaron and Miriam over trying to stand up to Moses' leadership just because he's married to a black woman. And he says, "You know what? Typically, I just give dreams and visions to prophets. That's not how I do it with Moses. This is how I do it with Moses." Verse 8, "With him, I speak mouth to mouth, clearly, not in riddles, and he beholds the form of he who is. And we know that. God has been meeting with Moses in this little tent of meeting, Moses' office, on a regular basis. And God comes down in visible form with the cloud right in front, and everybody acknowledges that. We also know that Moses had seen God's glory much more than anybody else. He glowed with the glory of God. He's having to wear a veil across his face because of people being scared about this glory. So God basically says, most prophets only get little bits and pieces of relationship with me. Moses doesn't. He gets face-to-face attention. And then he asks this question, why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So as I said, this is a dressing down by God of Miriam in particular, but also Aaron, for daring to challenge Moses' leadership only because he had been married to a black woman, somebody they didn't approve of. And so the anger of he who is was kindled against them. And then he departed. That is, God's presence pulls up away from this tent of meeting, the little office. And when the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aaron turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. Now, I think this is on purpose. Remember, the mark of leprosy is put by God on someone who needs to be evaluated and they need to change something. That's certainly true with Miriam. But the other thing seems to be very ironic here. Leprosy is seen as the complete removal of color from the skin. She was griping about Moses being married to a black woman. So God takes away all color from Miriam's skin. We got another cliffhanger. Come back tomorrow and we'll talk about the rest of this story.